Today on Wings, a history lesson on bloated U.S. military spending. This analysis was given to women legislators from across the U.S. who came to confront their members of Congress in Washington, D.C. during Clinton's presidency. The budget numbers are bigger now, but the pattern's the same. Trump did not invent the cult of unlimited expenditures for weaponry, allegedly offset by cuts in public necessities, but really piling debt onto debt onto debt to benefit corporate elites. Trump is merely taking it to what may be the end of the line.
$7.5 billion every year in our federal budget goes to help U.S. arms merchants sell their weapons abroad.
One of the continuing fights we have in Congress is whether or not defense contracts are a kind of welfare.
There's a river of birds in migration, a nation of women with wings.
Welcome to Wings, a series of news and current affairs programs by and about women around the world, produced and distributed by the Women's International News Gathering Service. The Women Legislators Lobby, known as WIL, is a large group of women state legislators from across the United States. On September 27, 1999, WIL heard briefings on key issues. One speaker addressing the budget was Congresswoman Lynn Rivers, herself a former state legislator from Michigan.
I was elected to Congress in 1995. I came in with the Republican Revolution. And at the end of the first day, my husband had a bag of goodies that he had been given as a spouse of a member of Congress. He had Clinique facial products. He had a Betty Crocker chicken cookbook. And he had a 14-point guide to accessorizing. 1995, and we still believed that the member of Congress would be male, the spouse would be female, and she would be most interested in cooking and looking nice. Completely out of touch with the real world. I was appointed to the Budget Committee, having come out of local government, having come out of state government. I felt like the priorities being expressed in the budget document of the United States of America didn't reflect real needs. The most prominent spending that we do as a nation is for defense. It is used either to buy weaponry, most likely weaponry, because we have a preference for spending on machinery as opposed to people. But it also goes for things like construction projects that are meant to support the defense apparatus, really to produce jobs in certain congressional districts. For several years, the F-22 was guarded zealously within the budget, and the money was there in the House budget. This year, the money was removed. Why? Because Newt Gingrich was gone, and the prime defender of that project no longer wielded power in Congress. The Senate, however, continues to support that particular airplane, and its funding likely will go on. Right now, I want to talk about tax cuts. You've probably heard that the large tax cut bill has been vetoed. I believe it is quite likely that we will see negotiations go on between the White House and Congress that will ultimately create some sort of tax cut package. And I will tell you, when we do that, the situation is going to get worse because of fundamental untruths that have been perpetuated here in Washington and really are the foundation of this whole debate. The first one is that we have a balanced federal budget in this country. When both parties began claiming that the budget was balanced, they did it in a very misleading way. They took dollars in, dollars out, and said, since it matches, we've got a balanced budget. Social Security dollars, those dollars left over at the end of each month between what's paid in FICA taxes and what goes out in Social Security benefits, were being used to argue that the federal budget was balanced. If those dollars were taken out of the mix, the federal government would find itself back in the red very quickly. Even next year, we were projected to have a surplus, to have a balanced budget, and in fact, that money has already been spent. When we allocated $12 billion to fight the war in Kosovo, we spent any surplus that was projected to come on the future. So in fact, we've not had a balanced budget. Recently, we began to talk about the surplus. and that there were dollars left over. And people said, this time it really is on budget. It's not Social Security. The problem is that those dollars have not yet materialized. They're projected. So the cuts we are talking about today, it's really like Wimpy saying to Popeye, I would gladly pay you on Tuesday for a hamburger today. That's what we're talking about. And we don't know if the dollars are going to arrive. As a matter of fact, there are some problems in the overall equation that suggest they may not. The idea of a surplus is predicated on two important issues. One, that the economy stays as strong as it is now, and knock wood, we all hope that's going to happen. But the second is that we're going to continue to pursue the balanced budget agreement, which was passed in 1997. And most people are aware that the balanced budget agreement put limits on the amount of spending that the federal government could do. But they are very unaware of what the balanced budget agreement is supposed to do in the next few years. We are struggling right now, having difficulty funding all kinds of programs that will be affected state and locally, just by the caps as they are. But the projection of the surplus is predicated on the agreement in the balanced budget amendment that we will, in fact, cut spending from where it is today in order to produce the amount of money that is currently being projected as a surplus, on-budget surplus. Overall, discretionary spending will have to be cut 20%. It gets worse. It gets worse. That assumes that the defense budget will be cut to the same degree that everything else will. Those of us who watch this process know that it will not. If you do not cut defense, all other discretionary spending must be cut by 54%. Now, I don't think that's going to happen. But then we have a problem, because if we give a tax cut today that we will happily pay for next Tuesday, and next Tuesday the cuts aren't made to produce the money, we are in fact going to be faced with either changing our spending again in a downward fashion or going back to the deficit spending that we did for the whole last decade. And some people say, well, that's fine, let's do deficit spending. Well, right now, 15% of the federal budget goes to servicing our $5.6 trillion debt. $250 billion a year to pay interest. That's not one penny on principal. If we can make progress on our long-term debt, those dollars can be freed up back into our general budget, back into our discretionary budget, and back into the programs that people rely upon. Probably most of you know that beginning in the middle of the next decade, we are going to have a significant problem in funding Social Security. Medicare is in much worse shape. We can't even figure out at this point how to fund the program that we already have, let alone expand on it. We have veterans who were promised benefits. We are now quietly but inexorably cutting back on those programs. We have brought children into this world who need to be educated. Our existing obligations are such that we must meet those first before we talk about tax cuts. And I'm like everybody else in the room. Every one of us would like to pay less in taxes. And as a politician, there is nothing that a politician would rather do than to be able to go into a room and say, I'm cutting your taxes. But I grew up in the Midwest. We're taught early on that you pay your bills, that you don't spend money until you have it in your hand. And this tax cut really is predicated on avoiding those two very real principles. And if we do not stop this kind of really shameless huckstering, we will find ourselves in tremendous problems in the long run. And I think that we need to make sure that we bring the debate away from making changes in the tax situation and instead bring it home to making changes in our priorities within the budget. And I will tell you, there is one way to do it. I truly believe that as more women serve at every level of government, the decisions that are made will be more humane. They will be more responsive to basic human needs. We are 52% of the population. We are the majority, a gentle majority, but the majority nevertheless, yet we serve in only 15% of offices nationwide. Why are we surprised that decisions don't reflect the views of most women?
Congresswoman Lynn Rivers, addressing the U.S. Women Legislators Lobby in September 1999. The president of WIL is Nan Grogan Arick, a state legislator from Georgia.
We have a total budget, folks, of $1.7 and a half trillion dollars. Talking about real money here. Those are the things we've committed as a nation to, that we're going to have a Social Security program, we're going to have Medicaid, we're going to have Medicare. You pull out of that, out of the total U.S. budget, the 34%, and that's the discretionary portion of the budget which Congress fights over every year. That's the hijinks and the monkey tricks that are going on right now. The Pentagon, community and regional development, transportation, education and training, employment and social services, the environment, science and agriculture, housing and income security, government administration and justice, health, international affairs. Those are the categories captured in the discretionary portion of the government. $591.5 billion. One half of the discretionary spending each year goes where? Does it go to health care?
No.
How about education?
No.
Oh, it's those welfare moms. I forgot.
No?
No, actually, that's less than 1%, I think. In fact, 50% of the budget, that's what we're looking at, discretionary programs only, up there what they're fighting about right now. 50% of that goes to Pentagon spending. $294 billion is what this year's Pentagon budget is coming in at. So while health care, education, housing, the environment, and other human needs programs get small slivers, the military gets 50%. And you know what? President Clinton is proposing $112 billion increase over the next 6 years. Guess what? That's back up, folks, to the level of the Cold War spending. Working it back up. When we were told there was going to be great budget cuts in the wake of the Cold War ending, dollars that we were going to be able to address to the nation's needs. But by the year 2005, they'll be back up to where they were when the Cold War was raging. But we don't have a Cold War. And as the Congresswoman so eloquently told us, when you do that spending, it's offset by cuts in the domestic programs. And if you look a little closer at that pie, you'll see that we're spending 5% on health out of our discretionary spending. We're spending 3% on international affairs, 9% on education, training, employment, and social services. $50 billion for education, training, employment, social services, against almost $300 billion for the Pentagon. This bears looking into, doesn't it? So Congress's spending priorities are clear. They've put it right out there for the nation to know, and it's going to be our job to tell the nation. Weapons over job creation and assisting low-income Americans, war fighting over international diplomacy. The message to women, of course, if you're home with a welfare check, raising children, caring for them full-time, you're breaking the federal budget. Have you heard that till you're sick? That women on welfare and their children are breaking the federal budget? And we also hear that women who get out here and work are responsible for the fabric of American family life just going down the hill to nothing. Let's look a little further. Congress has proposed, as Lynn said, significant cuts in community and regional development programs, housing, support for small and minority business. You just keep going down the list. Summer jobs, they wonder why youth crime goes up when youth programs go down. It's a no-brainer. We could tell them. Head Start. They've never funded Head Start in this country. When President Clinton came in, to Head Start was getting 25% of the eligible kids in this nation for Head Start were actually able to attend programs because we were only putting that many dollars in the Head Start program, a program proven to keep kids out of trouble, proven to make families more stable, proven to have for kids to have less intersection with this criminal justice system. And we're funding it at 25%. It's bumped up now into the 30s, but folks, it'll be on the chopping block. When you go and spend, get you up over $300 billion for the Pentagon, those programs are going to take the hit. And we got this idea in Georgia. We started going through budget cuts in the early 90s, and Lord, everybody that's trying to provide services and keep the women's shelters open, and we're turning away folks for substance abuse programs, we're turning away folks, women that need shelter from a battering, violent spouse, don't have enough room for those. And people are coming to the legislators, help us, they cut our program. They took the scoliosis screening program out of the Human Resources Department. Help us, we need to get our money back in. And I turned around and I said, you know what, these groups really don't even understand that the cuts are starting up there in Washington and that the money's going to build the next fighter system. We're going to look at those in a minute. I'm going to stop preaching. I'm going to get you some more hard information. But we brought people together in Georgia and said, here's where the money's going. Did you know what a B-2 bomber cost? Obscene amounts of money, and it goes up every year, and yet we can't run a scoliosis testing program for kids in Georgia. And all the folks that are out here working in the trenches every day, delivering services, aiding constituents through their faith community and their professional roles or through volunteer organizations, need to understand until we set this country on the right road with a military budget that reflects the true needs of the nation, not what all the defense contractors and their paid-off folks in Congress want, only then will we be able to address our budgets at the state level. And that's why women legislators is who we went to organize, because women get it. And women are going to take the truth to Congress. We're going to take it to our legislatures. We're introducing balanced budget amendments demanding that the military spending be decreased and that it be put over to secure the true security of our American people, and that is for housing, for jobs, well-educated, fully employed, productive citizens, raising families that'll be there for the next generation to do this. But you know what you hear from the boys? Oh, Lord, put a letter in the paper, and they go to hollering when you start talking about the cost of the plane. No, we need them. These people would have us, we'd be run over if we didn't spend this money. But I'll tell you what, if you want to take the size of the military budget for all the military spending that Sudan does, that Libya does, that Iran does, that Iraq does, that North Korea does, and that mean little old Cuba, they spend this much combined on the military. The seven, quote, rogue nations, all seven of them, the U.S. bar graph is as tall as this screen. That's the bloatedness. So folks, it ain't about securing our national defense. It's about lining pockets. Yes. That's what it's about. Yes. And where's the money going? Is it going into military pay? Is it going to our service people's families? 12,000 military families are on food stamps. Two-thirds of military housing are substandard. Military personnel routinely work two jobs to make ends meet and have a family member working too. My nephew and his wife, you know, just pulled away from the Navy finally. But it was scrape and scrape, because the money hadn't been going for the troops that they left to hoist the flag over. We're doing this for our troops. Money's going in the defense contractors' pockets. There's a long list of exotic weapons, fighter planes to bombers to submarines to helicopters. I mean, we would be here all day if we decided to look at their total weaponry and their exotic weapon systems. But let's just, Lynn, you mentioned the old F-22. Lord, remember down in Georgia when they rolled that bad boy out? Honey, they had lasers and they had cheerleaders and they had marching bands and they ever had it on cable TV and they had Newt Gingrich up there that this is what America's all about and this is what we need to make us strong. How much does it cost? $35 million a plane originally. The cost has soared. It's up at $200 million per plane. How many do they want to build? 339.
How many crashed?
$64 billion for the $64 billion for the program. And you know what? Only 14% of the required hours of flight tests have even been completed, and they haven't been satisfactory. Do we need it? No. The job of the F-22 was to defend against the Soviet fighter aircraft. They never did get built. You know, there's been a little problem over there with the Soviet Union. It doesn't exist anymore. And our present F-15 Eagle, the quote, in their words, finest fighter plane in the world, has now been sold to other countries. And they use that as a reason that they now need an F-22. There's a game here. They know what they're doing. So when you boil it all down, we underwrite with our tax dollars that ought to be going to fix up the schoolhouses in this country. We underwrite all of this enormously expensive, bloated, disgustingly outrageous, unregulated, unsupervised, unscrutinized, and unaccounted for spending on military systems. And you know who we're in a budget race with? You know who we're in an arms race with? This bloated budget? Ourselves. Our dollars versus our dollars. Because we underwrite with tax dollars all the development of these systems, and then it winds around, next thing you know, they're over there at the Paris Air Show, and dang, these things are so sexy. Well, Lord, Saudi Arabia wants to buy some. And, you know, there's money to be made off of selling this stuff. Who makes it? The defense contractors. Big budget bandit. Arms race with ourselves. Let's look at our nuclear weapons. While the Cold War's been over for 10 years, there are more than 36,000 nuclear weapons in the world today. And we are spending $5.5 trillion of taxpayer money for nuclear weapons which pollute the earth and pose enormous danger and threat, almost beyond our ability to comprehend. In the nuclear club, we're at the top of the list. We spend $35 billion every year for that privilege of being at the top of the list. $35 billion. But we can't pay any priest teacher salaries, can we? Good Lord. 5,000 nuclear weapons are ready to launch in minutes. That's our super overrated, overblown, overheated super readiness, that we can kick off 5,000 nuclear weapons in a minute. Can you imagine them kicking off 5,000 kids going to Harvard? It's not going to happen until we get in there and start running it. Not going to happen until our message is heard. And you know, this is what's so outrageous. We represent the mainstream. 77% of the American people believe the world would be safer without nuclear weapons. 61 retired admirals and generals are calling for nuclear disarmament. 34 Nobel laureates advocate nuclear abolition. But this nuclear weapons bandit is on the loose, blowing our tax dollars and stealing it from our children. Star Wars. They were smart when they named it, weren't they? Were they smart? Are they marketing? $120 billion of taxpayer money has been spent since 1960 on the Reagan Star Wars plan, which had another name before he came along. Space-based weapons, protective shield. Never going to work. We're told that by many, many experts who dare to speak the truth. But this multi-billion dollar system, even if it worked like a crackerjack, wouldn't be any defense against the likely sources of future attacks, low-flying cruise missiles or car bombs, terrorist things on the ground. A Star Wars shield up in the heavens isn't going to do a thing about that. But we're blowing the money on it. $10.5 billion over the next 6 years, $180 billion over the next 30 years. And this one, and a lot of us didn't know about this one until WAND and other peace organizations came up with these figures. $7.5 billion every year in our federal budget goes to help U.S. arms merchants sell their weapons abroad. That'd provide a head start for 500,000 kids, build 424 new schools, fund 50,000 new teachers. They're up there now batting down Clinton's plan to add 100,000 teachers. $7.5 billion of taxpayer money. We have 6,000 government employees whose full-time jobs is to help arms dealers sell U.S. weapons abroad. I mean, we're over in the area of ludicrous, ridiculous, and unbelievable, are we not? And then we underwrite loans from countries that can't afford to buy the weapons, and those are loans that somehow we don't have any problem at all eating. We're happy to do that. Now, if it were rice and beans for somebody, Lord, no, they're going to have to pay for that. We've got to get our priorities straight. We've got to end the arms sales subsidies, forget Star Wars, abolish nuclear weapons, and cancel the F-22 for starters. The top military experts said we can decrease the budget by $40 to $100 billion a year. And I want to look and talk for just a minute. Let's look at our vision of what a budget would look like, what we would do if we're writing the budget for our communities, our children. How do we slice it differently? Here's the story. Prenatal care, extension of prenatal care. Fundamental. Janet Reno told us 4 years ago when she spoke to us on violence that the first thing to do about violence in our society is to fully fund top-notch prenatal care. That was a woman. That's right. Health coverage for every American child. Those two would be $12.3 billion. Look what we could do over 142,000 affordable housing units. Expand WIC, the program for eggs and cheese and milk for pregnant moms and their newborn kids and their toddlers. We're not fully funding WIC. Is that a joke? We're not fully funding WIC. $24.3 billion to repair or replace one-tenth of the dilapidated school buildings. Head Start for all eligible children. 50,000 new teachers. Double the job training and the education for welfare to work recipients. $48 billion cut from the Pentagon budget. Goodbye to those things. Just a small shift in what we're spending over from the military side, the domestic side, and we would still be the strongest military power in the world. We wouldn't lose sleep at night about that. But we would be a much stronger nation internally because we would have a population better fed, better housed, better educated, better employed. That's the true security. And finally, you've heard how we support women to go to Congress, we support women's state legislators, and just finally a fact, when we looked at the voting record of the women that we'd supported to put in the U.S. Congress, they voted on education, on children, on women's issues, on the environment, on peace, on health. They voted right. They voted our priorities 91% of the time. Women overall in Congress voted 73% of the time for our priorities. The men were down at 49%. No question. 65 of 535 people up there are female. The women take the hit on welfare, on home heating, nursing home subsidies, every single area where they're cutting disparately impacts women. We have the most at stake. We must find our voices and take them and magnify them. We need more women at every level advocating and speaking out. Margaret Mead said, never doubt a small group of thoughtful, committed citizens can change the world. Indeed, it is the only thing that ever has. And you know, we're not so small. We are the mainstream. We are the majority. It is our vision that should be directing the spending of our tax dollars. Join us to take that message to Congress tomorrow.
Nan Grogan Orrick, a state legislator from Georgia and president of the Women Legislators Lobby, briefing the members of WIL in Washington, D.C., September 27, 1999.
The percentage of women in U.S. state legislatures is at a new high in 2025, 33.5%. Women also reached their highest ever numbers in the U.S. Senate, 26 out of 100. In the House, women members are nearly 30%, but four women members are not allowed to vote, including the representative from Washington, D.C.
Special thanks to Mal Johnson, Frankie Hutton, and Suzette Cullen, and to Genevieve Vaughn, author of the book Forgiving, a Feminist Criticism of Exchange. Wing's sound logo is from Libana's album A Circle Is Cast. This is the Women's International News Gathering Service.